And they're going to go for it, the Raiders will, on 4th and 1. 8:48 to go, first quarter, no score. With 4th down and a yard to go. They're 4 of 5 this year on 4th down conversions. One of the best teams in the league at it. They play action fake. They want to go long. They're going on the left side, are coming to the near side. Wide open is Devontae Adams burning the Chiefs. 10-5 touchdown Raiders. On a 58-yard bomb on 4th down and 1, burning Rashad Fenton. Burton, the fullback, offset eye. Edwards-Helaire, the tailback. 24-23 Chiefs. First down and goal to go at the 1. They're going to throw it. Near side it is. Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City! Travis Kelce, 1, 2, 3, 4 touchdown receptions. This time on a play-action fake. Now the Raiders are going to try to take the lead, trailing 30-29 to go for 2 at 4:27 to go in the game. Justin Jacobs to run it if they want. Chiefs lead by 1. Raiders going for 2 for the lead. Carr raises the right leg. Jacobs piling forward. They're not going to give it to him. They did not get it. Colin Saunders looks like he clogged the drain. 30-29, Kansas City. Single back is Jacobs. Carr is under center. Still 14 seconds on the play clock. Chiefs showing a run blitz. The car is going to throw a play action. Here comes a blitz. They throw it to the left side. Incidental contact. The pass is overthrown. It is incomplete. I'm looking for flags. I see none. The Chiefs have held on 4th down and 1 on a blitz on Carr at 41 seconds to go in the game to preserve a 30-29 lead.
A crazy game on Monday Night Football last night. The Chiefs prevail, spotting the Raiders a 17-0 lead. Rally, come back, and hold on to win. 30-29 was the final. We'll break it all down. Some controversial calls in the game. The roughing the passer is one that people want to talk about. There was another call in the game that didn't get nearly as much attention, and I'm happy I'm a Chiefs fan, not a Raiders fan today, because that call looked like a major makeup call for the roughing the passer penalty, in my opinion, and right away my oldest son said the exact same thing. And, you know, there has been this thing we've been talking about, or I guess maybe me, because you guys don't seem to want to jump in on it, and that is that the more and more I watch games and I see some decisions that are made, you have to wonder how much the game is being controlled by officials. You have to wonder, as legal sports betting is now legal in many states, the NFL and professional leagues now have partnerships with the logos of these companies now on their chairs, in their arenas, on their stadiums. And somebody said years ago, when somebody asked, I remember this, I read it, that why aren't you allowed to do all the betting on the games and so forth and so on? Or why are leagues so worried about not having anything in Vegas and so forth and so on? And you know what the thing was? Worried about, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not risking, but it is, I can't come up with the word.
The potential of influence.
There's another word I'm looking for. But it creates a chance for games to be manipulated. There are more people that are involved in regards to the amount that they have invested, whether it be a corporation, whether it be an individual, whether it be an official, whether it be a player, whether it be a coach, and somebody in the front office, a trainer. It could be anybody that has some kind of influence. Listen, when you sit here, and everybody laughs about this, and you see Scott Van Pelt do the Bad Beats segment, which they did again last night, the reason Bad Beats happen is because the people in Vegas and all the people that are tied to sports betting and setting the lines know so much more than even the people that follow the league on a regular basis, such as a Joe Buck and a Troy Aikman. They know more than the coaches do in regards to the cast of the whole league. And it's not just football. It's college sports. It's pro sports. And it is insane how all these people can be so fairly accurate before games even start. And you have to ask yourself at some point. And if you watch the Tim Donaghy special, I'll say it again on Netflix. You have to wonder. You have to wonder. The roughing the passing call last night was a gigantic call that could have determined who won the game. The roughing the passer call on the Falcons was a third down play that allowed the Buccaneers to keep the ball and run out the clock. If the Falcons get the ball like they're supposed to, they would have had the ball with 3 minutes to go, down six with a chance to beat the 45-year-old quarterback, Tom Brady. Instead, a call is made that determined the game. It made sure the Buccaneers won it. For the most part, it decided the game. And so you go back to the Kings and Lakers. Go watch that game. I watched it live years ago in the Western Conference Finals in Game 6. There were so many calls, you just scratch your head, and it was like they wanted to make darn sure it went 7. And so I'm not going to say the fix is in on every game, but after I saw the call when the Chiefs missed the field goal, I was like, what's the penalty? Like, I understand Chiefs fans being mad about the roughing the passer, but the Chiefs fans are very quiet about the defensive hold on the defense lining up for a field goal, and I'm sorry, I saw nothing at all that told me that was a defensive penalty on the Raiders at all. And that helped determine the game. It gave the Chiefs the ball and they score a touchdown. It was almost like, you know what? We really screwed up with that roughing the passer. And not only that, I screwed up because he had the ball too. And there we hear these things, makeup calls. They exist. This is no myth. Makeup calls exist. So we'll talk more about that coming up. The other great thing about last night to me is, Chiefs fans, you need to really, 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 really enjoy what you are watching. You really need to cherish every moment that Patrick Mahomes is a quarterback of your football team. And every moment Travis Kelce is out on that field, because he's 33 and he might only be a few more years. I don't think he's going to play 5 more years. So you need to enjoy, and here's why I say you need to enjoy. How many teams out there, fans of teams, how many of you, unless you're a Chiefs fan, how many of you, if you're a Bronco fan, a Seahawk fan, a Raider fan, even a Charger fan, how many of you out there, a Cowboy fan, there's a lot of those around, how many of you can actually say, when you're down 17 to nothing, 14 to nothing, 24 to nothing in a playoff game, and you still think you're going to win? How many fan bases have that belief? And I would tell you there is only one, maybe two. The Buccaneers might believe Brady can do things, and he can. I would say there's only two or three teams that feel that way, and that'd be Rodgers, Brady, Mahomes. I don't think Allen is there yet. He hasn't overcome huge deficits. That's insane. Last night, I'm watching this game. It's 17-0, and I'm not worried.
It was too early, right?
Well sure, yeah, it was.
So much time.
Right.
14 minutes still in the second quarter, and you're like,
I'm like, dude, all they got to do,
figure something out, and we'll be right.
it was 20-7, and the Chiefs got a field goal after having the ball for 17 seconds, which was huge. We'll talk about that. That made it 20-10. I'm like, dude, the Chiefs are perfectly fine. They're down 17-0. They're down 10 at half. They go down, score a touchdown, or even a field goal, and they're right back, in essence, on serve. I mean, you just got to get one stop, and you're back on serve. And so it is amazing how I remember how the Chiefs used to be. If the Chiefs had Trent Green, even Matt Cassel, Elvis Gerbach, even Rich Gannon, Alex Smith, ain't coming back from 14-0 or 17-0. It isn't happening. And you sure as heck ain't coming back from 24-0 a playoff game against the Texans in the divisional round of the playoffs. And even the Super Bowl, when the Chiefs did lose, you know why I was shocked by that result? Was that the Chiefs didn't come back and make it super
there
close.
Was no run at the end.
Yeah. I mean, that was the game that was the first time I ever saw the Chiefs not really make that run after being down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I have this unbelievable belief and faith in number 15, and the entire team does. Not only do we in Chiefs Kingdom feel that way, but the coaches feel that way, his teammates feel that way, and everybody in that Chiefs team, especially ones that have been there for a little while, like a Kelce, like a Chris Jones, like a Patrick Mahomes, guys that were there a few years ago when they came back from 24-0 down, and Mecole Hardman is part of that team, they all know there's no need to panic, no need to freak out, no need to get 17 points on one play because it's impossible, and there's no panic, there's no fear. It's kind of like, you know what, guys, we just got to flip the switch a little. I mean, we got maybe flip that switch a little bit more. Maybe it's caught in between on and off. We just got to step it up. And the call before halftime on Jones, on the ref and the passer, honestly, was a blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely a blessing in disguise because up to that point, the Chiefs were flat. And that woke them up. It woke the crowd up.
Woke the entire beast.
It did. It did. It absolutely
all
did.
Of it.
And I felt like when that call happened and the Chiefs were in the locker room and Andy's fired up and hot, which he should be, I was immediately going, this is Chiefs, man. They're winning this game. And it's the Raiders. They usually find a way to Raider. Although they did beat the Chiefs a few years ago at Arrowhead. So we're going to talk a lot more about this game and how the Chiefs came out flat, which I think was predictable, because we even said yesterday, your big emotional win over Tampa, the Raiders come in 1-3, Raiders are going to be amped up, ready to go, the Chiefs are pretty feeling good about themselves. I thought the offensive line maybe would have a little bit let down early in the game. We saw that. There's no doubt about that. But we'll talk all about that in a moment. But first, local sports. And the other thing we're going to talk about, besides the roughing the passer situation, to go or not to go for 2 points, and to go or not to go for it on fourth and short. And I will tell you who the next head coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers should be. It's somebody I mentioned when the Huskers fired Scott Frost, and now he's available. And the Major League Baseball playoffs coming up as well. Local sports, volleyball today and whatever else.
Yes, high school volleyball Beloit is at Ellis today, and we will have coverage of that on online video stream. It'll be at the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com for JV at 5:30 and varsity at 6:30. Best 3 of 5 sets there. Those are the ones that will be on the video stream. Things get started with a C-team match at 4:30. Again, we'll pick up with JV at 5:30 there coming up tonight. Also, Southern Cloud Quad, Lakeside and Sylvan Lucas and Natoma are competing there in Milton Vale today. Osborne is hosting Rock Hills and Chase in a triangular in the MPL. St. John's Tipton hosting Thunder Ridge and Tescott. Lincoln is hosting Pike Valley and Wilson in a triangular. And in a non-league affair, Great Bend Triangular Smith Center will be competing there. Also, Phillipsburg from the Mid-Continent League will be at Great Bend here this evening as well. Concordia at Abilene and the NCKL in volleyball action here this evening. That's really all that's going on here today. You can check out ncksports.com for all the latest in local sports as far as standing schedules, news, and scores. Again, everything posted there at ncksports.com.
All right. I liked when Chiefs play on Monday night because we have more time to talk about the game on Tuesday. Because there's so much to cover when the Chiefs play on a Sunday, because you have sometimes high school sports from Friday and high school sports the weekend, and then Saturday's college football and baseball playoffs right now, and then Sunday is NFL, and we talk Chiefs too. KU, K-State, Nebraska, Big 12, so forth and so on. Today we can focus the show on the Chiefs and the game last night, and then we'll talk a little baseball playoffs coming up as well. So the Chiefs are down 17-0, and the first thing I noticed... And listen, I think Joe Buck and Troy Aikman do a pretty good job. I didn't think they were on top of their game last night. I'll give you a perfect example of it. Because I watched the whole game. Unless they and they might have said it in pregame. I'm sure they did in pregame. But once Buck and Aikman came on live at 7:15 or whatever, it was not mentioned at all until the fourth quarter. Immediately, when the game starts and the Chiefs go out for the huddle, I notice Nick Allegretti is at right guard, and I realize Trey Smith's not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, uh-oh. Because Max Crosby's got an amazing motor, and you got Andrew Wiley on the right tackle side, who's held up pretty well. Right guard is Allegretti, and Trey Smith is a devastating run blocker as well. And I'm going, oh boy, this could be trouble. The Troy Aikman was the first one to mention it with 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So they were all over that one. That is a really important offensive lineman that should be mentioned that is not being mentioned. Not even talking about, hey, you know, they need some help for Allegretti. He's a backup lineman. I mean, some announcers nail this stuff. They did not last night. And I know they don't know the local teams that we do. We know our Chiefs. They know some of the other teams better than we do. But here's the thing that stood out to me. The Chiefs are down 17-0. And part of the reason they're down 17-0 is Andy Reid played like Trey Smith was on the field. Andy Reid, pass, right off the bat, you get sacked by Crosby, blows right through Wiley and Allegretti. Mahomes had pressure in the first couple of drives. And the Chiefs, of course, what do? We don't want to run the ball. Down 17-0, I'll tell you where the game turned for me in regards to the game calling. And this, I think, saved the day. Second down and 17 for the Chiefs. And, of course, you're thinking pass, and that's what the Chiefs have been doing. Up to that point, the Chiefs had run 20 plays. 5 runs, 15 passes. And Mahomes was running for his life on some of those. The offensive line was not holding up very well. Orlando Brown was getting smoked by speed rushers. That's a problem for him. Mm-hmm. Allegretti and Wiley were trying to do their best. They left the back end sometimes a chip. It's second and 17, and Jerick McKinnon, with an amazing, awesome, unbelievable run. He gained 6 or 7, but then he gained another 23 and carried defenders down the field. 30-yard run. And all of a sudden, Andy, I think, was like, oh, I forgot. I'm allowed to run the ball. I kid you not. I was like, Andy, you do know that you have not run the ball very much. Maybe you should try. Second and 17, I think he was just like, well, you know, that's pretty tough down in distance. Oh, yeah, I can hand the ball off. And then, oh, what do you know? 30 yards. All of a sudden, after that point, the Chiefs started to run the ball a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And they were effective. And guess what that did? All of a sudden, Mahomes, when he went to throw, had more time to throw. Did you notice this?
Absolutely, yeah.
It was night and day. Suddenly, the Raiders had to respect the run because Andy actually ran the ball like he did against the Bucs. But then, and this is the whole believe it or when I see it thing. Well, they did against the Bucs, yeah, but are they going to do it other games? And they forgot about the running game. They didn't use it. All of a sudden, they're down big time. Second and 17, McKinnon runs, gets 30. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, we can do that. I forgot we could do this. So that takes the pressure off the offensive line. It also makes the defense honor the run. And now that gives Mr. Mahomes more time to throw. And the Chiefs' offense was completely different the rest of the game after that. So that stood out to me. Also, the Chiefs gave a little bit more help after the first few possessions for Allegretti and Wiley against Crosby. That gave Mahomes more time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Chiefs just flat out went in and said, we're going to act like Trey Smith's still out there. We're going to act like nothing's happened, even though Allegretti's not even close to Trey Smith. He's a serviceable lineman, but he's not Trey Smith. So the Chiefs down 17 to nothing. They come back. And it's 17-7. Let's go. We'll jump ahead to the roughing the passer situation, and then we'll complete the game here. So it's 17-7. Raiders have the ball, and it's third down and 8. A little over a minute left in the first half. And I wish I had the play cut on the how Mitch called this, because I'm sure it was interesting. So third down and 8. Jones is lined up as a DN this time. He comes around the edge. He gets the car. If you watch the game, you know what I'm talking about. He strips the ball. He recovers the ball. He lands on Carr, but he also is bracing with his left arm. And so then the play is over, and they're talking and having this conference. And my oldest says, well, I think the Chiefs have the ball. And I said, I think they're going to throw a flag on Jones for roughing the passer. I think that's what this is about. I mean, as soon as I saw it, I thought that's going to be roughing the passer. And I immediately didn't think it was, but I felt like that's what they were going to do. And when I saw them talk for a while, I was like, oh, God, this ain't good. And then they threw the flag. It negates a strip, sack, fumble, and recovery. The Chiefs would have the ball near midfield or even Raiders territory at the time. Don't remember exactly what yard line it was.
Pretty sure it was in Raiders territory at some point.
I think it was between the 40 and the 50. So the Chiefs would add the ball down 17-7, plenty of time to get a field goal or a touchdown. The Raiders instead go down to kick a field goal, up 20-7. That's at least a 6-point swing, at least, if not a 10-point swing. Now, we don't know for sure if the Chiefs get a field goal because Matt Wright boomed a 59-yarder but missed an easy one and then missed another one. He was bailed out because of a call by the officials. So the Chiefs are down 20-7, and this is something that is being overlooked today, and easily so. Everybody's caught up in the roughing the passer call. The ensuing kickoff, the Chiefs, it was kicked out of the end zone. So the Chiefs have the ball with 17 seconds at their 25-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
Most teams are like, whatever, we're going to get the ball, start the second half, we'll regroup. This is why Mahomes was ticked off at Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was actually had better field position in that situation. That last year, 13 seconds, getting field goal range to tie the AFC divisional game against the Bills, force overtime, and win. Chiefs had, what was it? I think they had one timeout left last night in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chiefs pick up about 10 or 12 McKinnon, and then the dumb penalty, face mask slash horse collar on the Raiders. And now, suddenly, the Chiefs are in business. Chiefs make another play. Boom. Matt Wright comes out. And there were people in my house going, oh, we just got to throw a Hail Mary. We don't want Matt Wright. And I said, well, the odds are actually better to kick it here. Although I don't think he's going to make it either.
Bring Justin Reed out. I wasn't saying don't kick it. I was like, bring Justin Reed out to do this.
Yeah, there's no way you bring Justin Reed out in that situation.
So the way it was going.
So I was thinking, it's probably technically better to kick the field goal and try it. But I wasn't expecting Wright to make it. I thought he was going to, when he kicked it, I even thought it was going to be short. I was like, man, that's online. I didn't know if he had enough leg. And Wright drilled it, which is a new Chiefs record, believe it or not. Mm-hmm.
Again, this is 3 yards beyond the career high of Matthew Wright. Did a good job last week against Tampa Bay. But a monster try here, down 20-7 on a 59-yard attempt. Tommy Townsend waits for the go sign. Matthew Wright pounds it. End-over-end kick. The kick is up, and he got it! 59-yard field goal for Matthew Wright! Of his career, this time in Kansas City, not in London, and the Chiefs are within 10 and will get the ball to start the third quarter. 20-10 Raiders at the end of the first half.
This is why teams go for it 4th-and-1 against the Chiefs, 4th-and-2, 4th-and-3, 4th-and-5, even in their own territory. This is why teams go for 2 points like the Raiders did last night instead of settling for a tie. This is why the defense of the Chiefs is up against it than any other defense in this league. They have to defend 4 downs, not 3, because of that. Because Mahomes can get you in field goal range in 13 seconds, 17 seconds. Yes, the penalty aided it. And then they get at least in field goal range. We saw what the Chiefs did last year against the Bills. Butker, 48-yarder, which is a chip shot for him. I mean, it wasn't like they set up for a 62-yarder against the Bills. It was 48. They'd gotten really good field goal range with a couple of passes. Last night, Wright gets a 59-yarder. And that is being overlooked today because the Chiefs already had some, the fans were going crazy mad. Mm-hmm. So there was always the fire. And then on top of it, lost in all of that was the field goal, because now the Chiefs not only had momentum because they're ticked off and mad, but they're also got a field goal. Now and Matt Wright's on cloud nine. You're now only down 10 and you're going to get the ball. Like, they're in pretty good shape 20-7 getting the ball. But now they get the bonus of 3 points they should have never had because of a boneheaded penalty on a DB that gives the Chiefs an extra 15 yards. That was a play that was overlooked. So let's go to when the Chiefs woke up in this game officially, according to some. At least the fans really did. Was the roughing the passer call. And then we'll go over the rest of the game. So it's 20-10 at halftime, and the Chiefs are going to get the ball. I feel sorry for Chris Jones because, one, he chirped against the Colts, and he needed to be quiet, but I know there's other guys that chirp and don't get flags, and the NFL's not consistent with it. We don't know exactly what Chris Jones said, and we never will, apparently. And Chris Jones got a costly penalty, kept the drive alive, and the Colts end up going on. 2018 AFC title game, Chris Jones barely brushes the front of the face mask of Tom Brady on a third down play, and it called roughing the passer, kept the drive alive, and it was ridiculously horrible. Then we saw the horrible call that allowed the Falcons to lose against the Bucs on Sunday, which that was horrible. And then Mahomes, later in the game last night, is slung to the turf worse than Brady ever was. It wasn't even close, and there's no penalty on that one. Which I'm okay with that, but Brady, there's no way. So the roughing the passer is what a lot of people want to talk about today. It is a talking point. Let's hear from 3 different people on the roughing the passer call. Here is Andy Reid.
I thought he had the ball, so I mean that's what I thought. But that's their job, so they do that. It's an emotional game, so what I thought wasn't right, so but it is what it is. Yeah, listen, I'm into the league. I'm on a couple committees there, and I understand protecting the quarterback. That's important. It is important. There's a fine line, right? I mean, we've just got to sort that out. But these guys, I mean, they work their butt off to do a good job for us out here. And the league spends time doing it and looking at it. And so, but, sometimes there's a point where you got to let guys play. And we've just got to find where that happy medium is.
What about Mahomes? What's his version of that roughing the passer call on Chris Jones?
It wasn't the greatest call in the world. But, at the same time, it's hard. Hard job they have at refereeing, but obviously, I mean, whenever the ball comes out and that guy, he's going to try to get off of him, but it kind of they're both fighting for the ball at the same time. It's tough, but you have to find a way to bounce back, and we did.
Now, Chris Jones, and this is something, and I'll give credit. I talk about Joe Buck, Troy Aikman. I didn't think they had their best game last night as a broadcast crew, but I will give Troy Aikman a lot of credit and Joe Buck a lot of credit. They weren't afraid to be critical of that call. And Troy Aikman got to the point, he goes, at some point, you got to take the dresses off. He said that last night during the game. And this is coming from a guy that played quarterback. That took a lot of hits that he would love to play in the league today because he'd be protected a lot more, no doubt. And so what Aikman brought up was, I think at some point it has to be a reviewable play. And I agree. And this is something, Aikman said this last night on SportsCenter after the game in the post game with Scott Van Pelt. He said, when the instant replay was brought up, he said, Bill Parcells, I talked to him, great football coach, won multiple Super Bowls, and Bill Parcells said, I'm okay with replay, but that means you got to review everything. You've got to be able to review everything. And if we're not, then what's the point? And Aikman said initially he wasn't for instant replay. And he says, and I'm not for more replay, but at the same time, why is this reviewable, but this isn't reviewable? And he says the whole talk over the years is, well, you can't judge intent. And Aikman says, I disagree. I said, you can tell whether a guy is trying to hurt a quarterback or not. Mm-hmm. He goes, Chris Jones was not doing that. And I agree with Troy Aikman. I think you can judge intent. I totally agree with that. We can go back and review targeting college football. Why can't we review roughing the passer? So here's Chris Jones asked after the game, obviously fired up, and he should be because, you know, there's two calls that have gone against him. Luckily, this one didn't cost the Chiefs a game. First one, he could have avoided. This one, I don't know how he could have avoided unless he just quits playing football and retires. Here's Chris Jones on the controversial roughing the passer call, which, by the way, the refs are just instituting the rules that have been set down by the competition committee and the National Football League, and these rules are agreed upon by the Players Association and the league. So I feel for the officials to a point, no doubt, because they're just simply doing what they're told. They're supposed to see this. They see a weight on a quarterback. They want to protect the quarterback. And these stars of the league are mostly quarterbacks. And we'd want the same protection for Mahomes if the same thing happened, right? I'm sure we would. Chiefs fans would probably be okay with the call if it was roughing the passer on the Raiders and negated a strip sack fumble. We might agree it probably shouldn't have been, but we're happy to have it, right? Okay, so here's Jones on the roughing.
You know, the league has put an emphasis on protecting the quarterbacks, and I get it when you're paying quarterbacks $45 and $50 million, but, you know, those are situational calls right there, man. They're very important in determine the game, and I think the next level for the league is to actually be able to view calls in the booth on roughing the passer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we said that.
When we're able to take to that extent, a lot of these calls will go back, or being able to challenge a roughing the passer call. You know, they did it a couple of years back with pass interference. I think now you got to take that initiative since so many roughing the passers are being called. Also, and the rough is seeing it at such a fast pace, they're not able to see the slowdown version of it and see how it transpires. So I think that's the initiative to take. Other than that, this is a beautiful Christian league that I'm still adjusting to, and you know, I'm trying to find my way around.
Okay, there's another version after the game that I had, too, that I wanted to play. But anyway, Jones was more fired up. That was more very calm. He was more fired up, and he was talking about the hit on Brady. And he talked about, yeah, it's all over Twitter. Did I see it? I saw it. And he's talking about all of these plays that are protecting the quarterback. But the main point of whatever cut it is, whether it's calm or he's fired up, is you should be able to review it.
Absolutely.
And I agree with it. When it's a call that takes away a turnover, and they say all turnovers are reviewed, I mean, if you can review that, but you can't review whether or not he roughed the passer. He did mention the pass interference. They don't do that anymore. They did it for a short period of time, and it was a nightmare, by the way. But this, I think, is a little bit more clear-cut in regards to roughing the passer. And the best example I can point to is if you can judge intent and you can judge the way a guy hits a guy for targeting in college, you sure as heck can do it in the pros for roughing the passer. Agreed? Disagree?
Agreed, for sure. There's no question. I mean, you literally, they every targeting in college football.
Absolutely.
It is a point of they do it. If it's called, they go look at it right away. I don't know why you can't do that in the NFL. I know we complain about college football being too long, but if you're going to change a game like that and something that big in that situation, go look at it.
I agree. You have people there look at every play anyway. Yeah. I agree with you. Of course, you don't want games to last 4 hours.
Yeah.
Take forever either. And then in the window of the late games, that's not good. NFL doesn't want that either. We mentioned that that call really got the crowd fired up. Here's Andy Reid on the crowd, especially after that reffing call.
Crowd was unbelievable. They were phenomenal, loud, aggressive, and stayed that way for four quarters, man. My hat goes off to them. I love bringing people in here to play just to be introduced to that crew. I mean, they're tremendous.
So the Chiefs win the game. I think you can review roughing the passer, and they can change it during the season. They just changed the rules for the concussion protocols. As long as the Players Association NFL can do that, they can change it.
Mm-hmm.
And they could do it as soon as next week. They could, if they want to.
I find it funny, if you watch the first two sacks of the game, Crosby gets a bear hug on Mahomes.
Never went
doesn't
down.
Go to the ground. Yeah. Chiefs get one on Carr. Doesn't go to the ground. So it's... You know, they can do a job of protecting them. And, you know, you're right. You mentioned it's a rule that's on the books. And, you know, I understand what the referee saw, that he called it on Chris Jones. You understand what he sees anyway. And if there is a rule on the books, you understand what he sees. But it's what's unfortunate is, we can break down a replay where Chris Jones is slowly putting his hand out to brace himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, they talked about that technical point of, that's a point of emphasis of the officials that are supposed to watch that. We get to see it in slow time. Referees don't get to see it in slow time. They have to make up their mind right away. So I understand what they saw. You hate a bad rule ruining the game, but they'd have to do something, whether it's making these things reviewable. You can have the rule stay, or you're just going to have to go back to a little bit more old school football. I don't know what the answer is, but you got to be able to, if you're going to add things, you got to be willing to add things that counteract that as well.
Here's what Carl Jeffers had to say after the game. He's the white hat. He actually was the Super Bowl official of the Bucks Chiefs Super Bowl, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the official in the holding penalty on Eric Fisher when the Chiefs scored the two to tie the Steelers in a playoff game, and Travis Kelce went off on him and told him he didn't even deserve to have a official's jersey even at a Foot Locker. Remember that comment back in 16?
Mm-hmm.
So Carl Jeffers, this is what he said after the game. The quarterback is in the pocket and he's in a passing posture. He gets full protection of all the aspects of what we give the quarterback in a passing posture. So when he was tackled, my ruling was the defender landed on him with full body weight. The quarterback is protected from being tackled with full body weight. My ruling was roughing the passer for that reason. Now, there are a lot of people, and I've seen on social media, go on, listen, and my son said the same thing, and I said it doesn't matter. And it's hard to understand when I say it doesn't matter, but that is the case. And then Carl Jeffers affirmed what I had said to my son last night. And I don't agree with it, but that's what I knew, that's how the rule was. And a lot of people are caught up in, well, he didn't even have the ball. Carr lost the ball when Jones landed on top of him. And I told my oldest son, I said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether he has the ball or not. He was going to throw. And Jeffers says pretty much the same thing. He says the fact that Jones, Jeffers said that the fact that Jones stripped the ball from Carr and had already taken possession of the ball had nothing to do with the ruling. Here's what he said, and I quote, no, because he still gets passing protection until he can defend himself. So with him being in a passing posture and actually attempting to make a pass, he's going to get full protection until the time when he actually can protect himself. The fact that the ball came out and was recovered by the defense is not relevant as far as the protection the quarterback gets. So it doesn't matter that the ball came free and that Chris Jones had it, according to the rules and according to Sheffers. Now, whether or not that's going to be changed, I do not know. So that's the roughing the passer penalty. You can spend a lot of time on it. You can argue it all you want. The end of the day is that is a rule that needs to be changed or altered or tweaked or make reviewable. And if it isn't, it's going to continue to put a lot of onus on the officials. And many people believe this is an overreaction to the Hotua situation where he wasn't protected by officials and taken out of a game by somebody up in the sky in the crowd, so that he wouldn't have got drilled again and taken a second concussion in essence in 5 days or so. We believe he may or may not have one against the Bills in that game. So this is an overreaction, some people believe, to the Tua situation to protect quarterbacks. And, of course, the quarterbacks are usually stars of the league. And so they were able to change the concussion protocols and make it. And you notice how many more guys left games this past weekend and did not come back in? Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. I noticed that almost every game there's one or two guys that weren't coming back. They're declared out very quickly. So that's already had an impact on the game, which I'm okay if that, you know, keeps guys safe. I'm cool with that. But at the same time, you have to be able to play defense. And if you can't play defense, this league loses all credibility. And if you're not allowed to, you know, tackle the quarterback, you're not allowed to sling him down to the turf. I understand hitting him low, going at the knees, like Kenny Pickett had a guy go low, Shaq Lawson, that was dirty. I agree that should be a penalty. No doubt. You could rip up a guy's knee in his career. But I say that's true of not just the quarterback as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the quarterback gets extra protection. But that... The Brady one on Sunday was really sad. I thought it was even worse, to be quite honest with you, in regards to how bad the call was. And the one last night was really bad as well. But if you don't have the way of going back to look at it and review it, the refs have to stick with what they called.
Yeah,
wrong or right.
It's definitely for what Jason was talking about with the quarterbacks not going down. That's a cognizant effort by the defenders to make sure I'm not going to get penalized on this play. And so what happens there is... probably the concussion protocol that is in their mind, and two, they saw what happened on the Tom Brady play on the day before, and it's like, I can't do anything to this quarterback or I might get penalized. And so now you're handicapping a defense, especially, look, we always say, like, one of the most important players, maybe the most important player on defense, is the edge rusher that can get to the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are you paying this guy this much money if he can't actually touch the quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. he's getting a lot of money to do his job, and now you're telling him he can't do his job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris Jones is not an edge rusher, but he's a guy that they pay to get to the quarterback, mm-hmm. and he does it very effectively most mm-hmm. of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's he supposed to do? Like, why are you paying him this much money if he can't do his job?
That's convinced.
That's the thing that bothers me the most.
I'm convinced, and I think you've seen it. There have been times where guys have a chance to sack a quarterback, and they're worried about getting a penalty. The quarterback breaks free and makes a big play.
Yeah.
I think we see that more often than not, which helps the offense, clearly. And I thought Troy Aikman, Mary, you made a very good point last night. Maybe it was Joe Buck. Actually, it was Joe Buck after the game said this, and I thought he made a great point. He said, listen, these quarterbacks are big, strong guys.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, Mahomes is 6'3", and two. I mean, he's built. Josh Allen's tough to bring down. Ben Roethlisberger was tough to bring down. You know, Lamar Jackson is slippery. He's hard to bring down. Justin Herbert's not. I mean, these quarterbacks are bigger, stronger than they've ever been before. So you could argue, well, why are they getting more protection? And so you're not able to take them down as easily as you used to be able to. And so thus it makes it harder to sack the quarterback. And then on top of it, even harder when you get penalized when you do sack the quarterback. So yeah. I don't know what a D player, defensive line, defensive end, I don't know what a linebacker on a blitz is supposed to do. I really don't. I thought you're supposed to light him up. But you can't apparently do that. And there's the sacks you mentioned reminded me of the Pro Bowl. When Mahomes got wrapped up, and there's another one later on a stoppage on a pass to a receiver, and he actually never got tackled, forward progress has stopped, I suddenly just had a flashback to the Pro Bowl this year. Like, now, that's not what the NFL wants. If you get to that point, this is not watchable football. We want to see some hits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to see guys decapitated, but I want to see some hits. That's part of football. So there's that. And here's the cut, a little different version. And this is Jones. Let's listen to this version. It's similar, certainly, but this is Jones last night after the game as well about the roughing the passer.
I think roughing the passers, they don't put such an emphasis on it that we got to be able to view it in the booth now. You know what I mean? I think that's the next step as the NFL as a whole. If we're going to continue to call roughing the passers at that high of a velocity, then we got to be able to view it in the booth to make sure, because sometimes it looks can be deceiving, you know what I mean? From the ref point of view, he probably looked like that initially, but, you know, and when you look at the replay, it's a whole different thing. So I think now to evolve roughing the passer and protecting the quarterback is essentially what we're doing in this league. We got to be able to look at roughing the passers in the booth. You take a look at the Grady Jarrett situation.
I was going to ask you about that. Did you see that one from yesterday?
Of course. It's all over Twitter. And what type of situation that was in the game. That was a third down stop also. And then when you take that in initiative, if we're able to view it in the booth and the referees can get a second look because it's happening so fast, maybe we can change that. Because now it's getting absurd. You know what I'm saying? Now it's causing teams games.
I agree. A couple things are different about that cut is he doesn't throw the ref under the bus. He's just saying, you know, it happened so fast. I can see why he saw what he saw. But if you go back and look at the booth, you can see it's not as bad as you thought. Obviously, live always looks worse than it does with replay. Listen, last night, the Davante Adams catch late in the game, I thought was a catch when I saw it at first. And without replay, the Raiders probably win the game and kick a field goal. Replay shows he bobbled and they got the call right. Well, they got the roughing the passer wrong. So they got a call right because of replay. They got a call wrong because they couldn't go to replay. So that's what Chris Jones is talking about. And there's more and more of these calls being made. So that means there's more and more impact on the result of the game.
Another one they got right was the two-point conversion, too. You call it different. Say you think he gets in. Now there's that argument, well, I can't overturn it if it's close. So that has a – and they're really good at that call. Yeah, the referees are really good at that, is the knee down before he gets into the end zone call. And it's just so frustrating that they can be so good at that. And then, you know, I think this is more of a bad rule than it is a bad call, if that makes sense.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I mean, based on the letter of the rule, yeah. They did it right.
Yeah. And I don't know.
Full body weight.
You know, we talk about going to review that, but I don't know if that call gets overturned with review.
I think it does.
It gets close.
It depends on how they reword the rule. If they say intent, and if they say if a lineman tries to brace himself, it depends on how they write the rule. If they say the defensive player tries to avoid the weight and braces himself, that would be one key to look at and say, okay, obviously he's trying not to land on him hard, as Chris Jones did. Whereas if he just puts all his weight and doesn't try to brace himself, they may uphold the call.
Yeah,
it's all based on the wording.
And it's based on the interpretation of what I saw,
right,
too. Because
sure.
I believe that he was putting his other arm down to try to brace himself.
Right.
But do they believe that that happened quick enough? Is somebody going to say that's indisputable evidence that he tried to brace himself?
Well, the thing is, the indisputable part, that's where you get into the gray area of indisputable based on intent and interpretation.
Yeah.
And that's where it goes back to, well, you can't judge intent. And Aikman says you can. I think you can, too. And I think that's the gray area. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a hard time believing this crew, if Carl Cheffers believes what he just said, mm-hmm. that they're going to go in and say, yeah, but I know New York is going to have more input on that than Carl Cheffers is. But I'm concerned. I understand the concept of going back and reviewing it. But the more you think about that, do they overturn it?
Well, no, and I'll tell you that they don't. And here's why they don't overturn it. The rule hasn't been changed.
Yeah.
Last night, if they're allowed to review it, but the rule is exactly the way it is now, and just as Jeffers explained as I read his quotes after the game, of course it's not overturned because that is the rule. And the review, the only thing different is you're allowed to review it. The rule has to be changed.
Yeah.
The wording of the rule, the intent, the interpretation, whatever you want to throw on it, that has to change. And then once that changes, then you institute the reviewable part. But no, mm-hmm. I think you're right. If that was reviewable last night, based on the rule being exactly the same as it is today, I don't think it's overturned.
Yeah, I mean, because you can still go into the whole fact of he tried to brace himself because that takes off his full body weight.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the rule, right?
Yeah.
And so
I don't think Jeffers changes
it
because
of
that.
That does take off his full body weight.
Right. Even though you see him land on him pretty hard yet.
Absolutely.
So I think that's why he would stick with the
yeah.
call. I think it's about the rule. It's usually not about the officials.
Most
it's usually
of the time
about the
it
rules.
Is, honestly.
Yeah, and I've always said you got to keep things simple. The officials, people have no idea how difficult it is to be official, especially at those levels, with all the crazy rules and interpretations. There's rules that people, and I still don't even know about the game, and some weird thing will happen in baseball, football, basketball, whatever it may be. You're like, oh, dear, I didn't know that. But the refs do.
Just,
and then you go at the refs because you don't know it, so mm-hmm. you must be right. When they're right and they actually knew the rule, which is an obscure rule, I mean, you should look at the rule book. It's very thick.
Just look at what's a catch.
That's changed over the years multiple times.
There's different things for a guy falling to the ground as there is for a guy going to the sideline as there is for a guy just standing and catching a football. And the making a move, is it a catch or a fumble? Is it incomplete? those things. And I think for the most part, they get those things right. But it's just, you're right. It is very, very complicated on some of these things. And every time they try to fix it, it's almost like they add more verbiage to it.
Right, and make it,
and
more,
make
complicated.
It more complicated.
I agree with that. And the side judge on that 2-point try, that was a heck of a call he got right. Because I thought he was in at first. And then the replay showed he was right. So let's go through a little bit more of this ball game. So Mahomes finishes 29 of 43 for 292, 4 touchdowns, all to Travis Kelce. Did you see Travis Kelce's tweet today? Somebody made up a little video snippets of Al Bundy at Polk High from Married with Children. And if you have not seen that show, it's funny. I always loved it growing up watching it. And Al Bundy is my favorite character on television. And it was, you know, sometimes a little risque, the show and this and that. But he always bragged about scoring 4 touchdowns in 1 high school football game. And in the last little highlight of the thing that they put together is saying, "Oh, don't worry, dear. This will not be the highlight of my life," when he's with Katie Seagal, Peg Bundy in the car in high school. Well, it is. And he says it 1,000 times. Well, somebody put together a whole snippet of these cuts, and Travis Kelce saw it. And Travis Kelce said something about, "Yeah, I'm like Al Bundy," or something like that, because Al Bundy scored 4 touchdowns in the game. Kelce last night only had 25 yards receiving.
It's a great.
Who cares about yards?
It's a great statistical line. I think it was like 7 catches for
25.
We used to joke, our friend group, we used to call them Edelmans. You get like 12 catches for 84 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kelce almost went late career Bettis.
Yeah.
Where it was like 4 carries for 3 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and
7 catches, 25 yards, 4 touchdowns. The previous low for yards with 4 touchdowns in a game was 90 some. So he blew that record away. And I don't know how he gets open all the time either. It's great scheme by the Chiefs. The other guys, Ryan Clark broke it down last night. And he goes, "These are the sacrificial lambs." And he pointed to Schuster and Hardman and Moore. And this is the chosen one, Kelce. And they're supposed to do this, and it's never designed for them. All along, it's designed for Kelce. But teams don't know that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they have these different route trees and different plays and this and that. And then some smooth little pick plays they have, the Chiefs are pretty good as well. Of the Chiefs, 17-0 down, come back and win. Second largest comeback for Mahomes in a game, the largest 24-0 in the playoffs. He's come back from 10-point deficits multiple times in the playoffs in that same year. But he'd never done 17, except for the one game where down 24-0, it's Texas divisional playoffs. This is Mahomes on Fighting Back.
Yeah, I think there was anger of just kind of how we had played up until that point. I mean, I feel like they were the physical team. They brought the fight to us. But I thought our guys responded. And I was just talking with guys in the locker room. It was like, sometimes these games are the ones that build the true character of the team. I mean, whenever you don't have, you to come out and they're kind of like throw that first punch and hit you, how you respond and go back and fight, you just don't know how guys are going to respond. We have a lot of the same players that have been in some deficit games, but at the same time, we have a lot of new guys as well. And so for guys to respond and just to keep battling, no matter we're down 17 points, and show that we can fight back from anything, that's what you want to see out of any great football team.
Patrick Mahomes is 23-3 against AFC West in his career. That's pretty good. And he's never lost to the Broncos. Mahomes last night passed Troy Aikman on the all-time list for career touchdowns with 166, yet no mention of that whatsoever during the broadcast with Aikman in the booth. Now, I remember Aikman took some shots at Mahomes a couple years ago. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think the 4 that he held up was just as much that as it was for the 4th touchdown for Travis Kelce, if I'm being honest with you, because he knew who was calling the game. That's all around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because that was one of the talking points last week was, hey, Travis Mahomes gets – or Patrick Mahomes gets 4 touchdown passes. He's going to pass Troy Aikman. And yeah, it was interesting that there was no mention of it.
Yeah, very interesting to me. Andy Reid's overall thoughts.
What a good win to get against a rival. Josh has done a phenomenal job there with the Raiders. They played us very tough. As far as players that stood out, listen, our D-line, we had to reach down deep at the D-line, and Colin Saunders played a heck of a game. Herring played a nice game, stepping in. He got a ton of snaps. Bolton was off the charts with his tackle. I mean, it's going to be hard to find another guy in the league that, you know, the tackle better than Bolton. I mean, he's unbelievable. And then Harris stepping in at the linebacker spot. I mean, I can keep going with that, but offensively, McColl just had some tough yards for us, man. Stepped up there. They're trying to take
Kelce out of the game. I mean, he had 25 yards and four touchdowns, so I mean, that's a pretty good day, but kind of a weird number. Marquez had some big plays for us. Juju, Sky stepped up at the end, had some big catch and runs for us. Ella Gray stepping in and doing a nice job at the guard spot for us. So all in all, it was just, probably a tale of halves. We played a lot better the second half, or at least the second part of the second quarter there, and then through the second half than we did the first half. So, but it was a nice win to get for sure.
The running game was kind of interesting. McKinnon didn't carry it a ton, but he was effective. Pacheco really didn't get much of a chance last night, and he had been really good the week prior. And then Allaire, you know, did what he did last night. Nothing spectacular. Had one hit him in the helmet when he wasn't ready for a pass, but then he also had a really nice catch down to the one. And Allaire's been more of a threat in the passing game here this year too. But let's go to the fourth quarter, I think it was. So Matt Wright makes a 59-yarder. He missed a 41-yarder early in the game, makes a 59-yarder before halftime. And his extra points, he kept pulling to the left. And I was nervous he was going to miss an extra point. In fact, one of them hit the upright and bounced in. And so he misses a 37-yard field goal. And I wasn't surprised. We said it before the kick. My son and I were watching the game, and he said, he needs to make an adjustment before the kick. And I said, I think he's going to miss it. And he did. He didn't make the adjustment. He pulled it just like he pulled the extra points. But yet makes a 59-yarder. It's just weird. So they call the defensive holding penalty on Raiders, which, listen, if you're a Chiefs fan and you tell me that was a great call, you are wearing the red-colored glasses. If you're objective, which is hard to be when you're biased as a particular fan, but if you're actually objective, and I'm objective enough to say it, if that was a call against the Chiefs, we'd be screaming today about that call. And I bet your Raider fans are screaming about it today as well. And I think that was a complete makeup call. I truly believe that. There is nothing that tells me that call should have been made. What happened with the Raiders with the defensive hold on that field goal try was no different than you see on almost every single extra point and field goal attempt in the league. Mm-hmm. I was expecting to see, as they said, that he jerked the guy, pulled him out to open the hole to try to block it. He didn't do that. In fact, it was Allegretti who was the one that supposedly was the victim of this. He was holding on to the jersey of the Raider guy as well. So I don't think there should have been a flag there, and that would have meant the Raiders would have the ball down one. And that changes the complexion of the game without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Instead, the Chiefs get the, as I call it, makeup call, and then they end up scoring. Chiefs go up 30-23. The Chiefs then go for two, which I'm all for. I've said this before. I don't understand. Like, when you're up one score, if you're up seven, the extra point makes it eight, so you can't be beaten, okay? But you can put the game away, possibly. Go up two scores. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a great offense, why not? And I'll tell you this. I don't think Andy Reid would have done that last night if Harrison Butker's the kicker.
No, I don't either.
And he wouldn't have done a fake field goal in Indianapolis if Harrison Butker's his kicker. The Chiefs miss Harrison Butker more than people realize. And the Chiefs, in essence, it cost them one game. Mm-hmm. Now, there are many other mistakes they made against the Colts, obviously. Last night, it nearly cost them the game. So they go for two. They don't get it. And I told my oldest, I said, you know, I love going for two. It's the right decision in my mind. The only bad thing is, I will guarantee you when the Raiders score a touchdown, notice I said win. When the Raiders score a touchdown, they're going to go for two and take the lead. The only problem with this is you've opened the door for the Raiders to try to get the win. Mm-hmm. That's the only problem with that. And sure as heck, that's exactly what happened. Raiders go down 30-29. They go for two, and they're stopped just short. And I have no problem with running the ball in that situation because they ran the ball very well against the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. I thought they got in initially. The only question I had was, do you go for two with 4:27 left? 27 seconds, minute 27, yes. If you think that's the last possession for you, because you know the Chiefs getting the ball no matter what with 4:27 to go. And we know the Chiefs can score in 17 seconds and 13 seconds. Mm-hmm. So the Raiders go for two, and I thought it was the right call. There are people criticizing that today. Of course, it's easy sitting on your couch, and if the guy misses the extra point, you would say what? We should have gone for two. They go for two. CBS Sports has a story today And it's written by three different people because apparently they're not smart enough to put together their own story by one. So they have three people together, and they have, and I quote, "Raiders went for two when they should have kicked the extra point. Had the Raiders taken the extra point rather than go for it on two, the game would have been tied as the clock expired and would have gone to overtime." And I'm going to tell you, that is a bunch of horse pucky.
That's not completely false, but it's not the same game.
Well,
when the Chiefs have the ball.
That's the thing I want to point out. So I would like to ask the writer that wrote that. They scored a field goal with 17 seconds left before halftime. They scored a field goal with 13 seconds left in the AFC divisional game. You don't think the Chiefs' play calling is a little bit different with 4:27 to go in a tie game and they need points to win instead of being up one and then be more conservative trying to milk the clock? You don't think the plays and everything the rest of the way is different in a 30-30 game? Because the Chiefs aren't going to just sit on the ball for 4:27, go to overtime.
No.
So these are asinine comments. I mean, they're just stupid. And these are national writers that just, I believe there are people that write stories for a living or do certain things for a living covering a sport and don't know what they're talking about. I'm convinced of it. And this was just absolutely clueless. Like, if you want to say, and they may have gone to overtime, you're saying this is a fact. The game would have been tied as the clock expired and gone to overtime. You're stating this after you know what happens after they failed on the two-point try. Let me tell you something. Do you think the Chiefs on second down and two in a tie game are going to automatically run it near midfield?
No.
No. But that's what they did. Why? They had a one-point lead. They're trying to milk the clock. They mixed in some safe passes. I didn't like the third and three, whether it was the play call, whether it was Mahomes taking a shot down the field. Just get the yards, okay? Mm-hmm. Short passes, whatever. And the Raiders did get the ball back. But here's the thing. People point to that. Well, the Raiders got the ball back. And they got the ball back. So, man, if they gone for the extra point, been tied, so then they would have had some leeway. But see, if it's tied, I don't think the Raiders get the ball back anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Chiefs score and the Raiders get it back and it's 33-30 or it's 37-30. The revisionist history is always beautiful to me. So you think the game was going to be called exactly the same way. You don't think the Chiefs called the game differently up one with 4:27 to go than if it were tied. Ask yourself that question before putting out a dumbass comment like that. Sorry, I'm going to call it as strong as I want to call it. That is not a fact. This is the problem with journalism today. Whether it's politics, whether it's regular news, whether it's sports, is when people interject their opinion. Like sports talk, like we do, yes, it's opinion. We can do it. We're not writing stories. We're talking. We can have our opinion. When you're writing a story to cover a game, there should be no editorializing, and it should be no opinion at all. And you can, and this, that is not a fact. That is not a fact. If the Raiders kicked the extra point, it would have gone to overtime. You cannot say that.
No.
You cannot say that. You can say it could have, it may have, I believe it would have, which once again is your opinion in a story that you write nationally for people. That journalism is going down the toilet. I'm just going to say it now. I'm tired of reading about all this stuff where people are starting to interject opinion and when they're supposed to be writing a story about the game. Okay? Don't try to tell me Bobby Witt Jr. is the greatest baseball player that ever lived until he's actually played a couple of seasons in the league. All right? Don't sit here and throw in the Raiders would have gone to overtime had the coach gone for the extra point instead of two. First of all, we don't know for sure if he would have made the extra point.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have. He's pretty good. Secondly, 4:27 remained in the game, and even if it was 27 seconds and he went for two, or kicked the extra point, mm-hmm. That's still plenty of time for Mahomes to get in field goal range. That would have been even more reason to say it would have gone to overtime, and you can't even say it with 27 seconds because we have two documented cases within the last 9 months. 13 seconds, 17 seconds, Chiefs score a field goal. You're telling me they can't score in 4:27 in a tie game? Tell me you're clueless without telling me you're clueless while writing a national story.
No, I can't add to that. I added my two cents right when you brought it up. It's like, you don't, if that is indeed just a story about the game, you can't put that in there. Now, if they're writing an opinion piece about the game, then yeah, that's fine. You can say you're still wrong, but you can say that. But yeah, there's no, it's not based in fact.
Listen, if it's the very last play and the Raiders score a touchdown with no time on the clock and they go for two and they miss it, you can say, if he'd gone for one, it'd gone overtime. That's the only time you could say that.
Mm-hmm.
Only time. But anyway, I digress. The other thing is, to go or not to go on two-point tries. I thought the Chiefs was the right situation because their kicker was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I would have said kick the extra point. Because I knew the Raiders would go for two. The Raiders, I think, did the right thing. Go for two. You still have time to get the ball back, hopefully, if you need to. And you put pressure on the Chiefs a little bit, like McDaniel said. Of course, if you don't, you don't put pressure. Nope, there's not as much pressure on the Chiefs because the Chiefs have 1 point lead. Fourth down and one in the first half. It was a 3rd and 13. And this is what happens when I watch the Chiefs play football now. And it's been this way for 3 or 4 years. When it's 3rd and long, you know what I'm telling myself? It's not keep them shy of a first down so they punt. It's don't give them enough yards to allow them to think about going for it. And so they had them stop for a 7-yard gain, and then the pile pushed forward, and they gained another 5. So a 3rd and 13 became a 4th and 1, and they went for it. And I'm a little bit surprised more teams don't do this either. When it's 4th and 1 against the Chiefs, instead of just running the ball, which, you know, you can probably get it 9 times out of 10, but that's a great time to take your shot.
Mm-hmm.
If you're all in and you know you're the underdog and you've struggled to beat the Chiefs, you go for it about every time you can, 4th and 2, 4th and 4, 4th and 5, whatever it is. If you don't trust your defense, and most people don't against Mahomes in the offense, then you go ahead and you be risk takers and you try to make things happen. 4th and 1, not only do you go for it, but then you see everybody come up line of scrimmage. That's your shot to go deep, and they burn the Chiefs big time. Mm-hmm. And that was a great, great call. 57-yard touchdown pass to Adams. So, all in all, at the end of the day, we figured out the roughing the passer penalty needs to be looked at. Whether or not teams should go for two or not, I think Aikman made another good point. Analytics is giving coaches an excuse now to be more aggressive, to go for two. He said for years coaches have wanted to do this, go for two more often, go for it on 4th and 1 at their own 45, but they're always worried about the questions they get after the game, which to me, the fact you're worried about questions after the game means you're not truly coaching your team, mm-hmm. is my opinion. If you're going to go down swinging, go down swinging with your personality. Brandon Staley went for it against the Browns the other day on 4th and 1 at his own 46 with 1:10 to go. Up 2. Now, conventional wisdom says you punt. Because what if you don't get it?
Mm-hmm.
But Staley's aggressive. He went for it. They didn't get it. Pass play, incomplete. Browns, all they had to do is go 10 yards, tried a 54-yard field goal, and luckily for Staley and the Chargers, missed just right. Just barely right. Now, there are people saying that was stupid. He should have punted it. I argue you can decide the game on one play instead of there being another 8, 9, 10 plays.
Mm-hmm.
I actually am okay with going for it 4th and 1 in that situation. Now, I know it's risky, and you open yourself up to a lot of criticism. At the same time, when you play the Chiefs, that's absolutely what you should do. You should absolutely, it should be a given. When you play the Chiefs, especially at Arrowhead, you have a 4th and short. Unless it's inside your own 30, probably, you go for it. You go for it. You put the pressure on the defense, which is better than it's been in the past, but it's still not the number one unit on the field. And the Chiefs defense then has to defend not 3 downs, but 4 downs, puts a lot of pressure on any defense. Imagine if the Chiefs had that same philosophy, how much pressure that put on other teams as well. So I love that coaches are going for a 4th and 1 more often, 4th and 2, wherever the ball is in the field. I like coaches trying to finish games. Listen, the Chiefs, when they punted the football, by the way, and you may say this was the right call, they missed on the 3rd and 3. They're up 1 point, and they were near midfield or just past midfield. And so the Chiefs punt the ball on 4th and 3. Do you know what the analytics say on that play?
Probably pretty close to even, or maybe even more tilted to going for it.
It is. It is tilted to go for it. The analytics say the Chiefs had an 84% winning percentage probability rate had they gone for it on 4th and 3 to finish it. It's not 4th and 1, 4th and 3. and they had a 77% probability rate of winning if they punted. So there was a better chance they win had they gone for it. Now, that's the analytics. You watch the game, and I say I probably would have punted it as well because all they need is a field goal. Now, if they need a touchdown, I don't know. I still probably punt it. I'm not going to lie to you. Fourth and one, I think I'm going for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fourth and three, of course, the Chiefs short yardage. It's better fourth and three and fourth and one. But I think fourth and one, I think I know what Andy would have done. They would have punted. If it was fourth and one last night in that situation, I think they would have punted. I would go for it.
Analytics, you know, I think, and Joe Buck does a nice job of sprinkling it in. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll say, analytics say go for it. Well, you know, that gives you the result if you make it more often than not. What Joe Buck is talking about is the real good teams that understand it the best also know what those are when you fail too. Mm-hmm. So that then they're kind of making it. It's a quick decision. It has to be a quick decision. You only have 40 seconds on the play clock. Mm-hmm. But they understand, and some places even have a guy that's just all he does.
Yes,
and they understand risk reward. Yes, it's obviously it's easier to say if we make this, we're going to win the football game or have a better chance. But if we miss it, is it a tangible risk to do it as well? So you can't be a slave to analytics. You can't be a slave to feel. But the best coaches are going to be able to toe that line. Every once in a while, you're going to know what the percentages say, but you're going to like, I just don't feel it. Those are the best coaches.
It is about feel, though, too, because if your defense is playing really well, you punt.
Yep.
If your offense isn't very good, you probably don't go for it. But if your number one unit is your offense, and you're going to trust your defense, which is not your number one unit, shouldn't you trust your offense to get 1 yard to end the game and put the final nail in the coffin?
Yep.
And then some people say, well, that's really trusting your defense, because if you don't get it, then you trust your defense to defend the short field. And then there's also the flip side of the argument is, if I trust my defense, I'd punt.
Defense has to get a stop either way.
Either way they do, true. But obviously in that situation, if the Chiefs go for it on fourth and three, the Raiders only need to get 15 yards.
If you miss, you're two plays and you're going to win the game. It's a one-point game.
Exactly. So I think it's probably the right thing to do, fourth and three, to punt. Having said that, fourth and one, that's a different scenario to me completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although it's the same thing that's in place. If they don't get it, 15 yards, and you lose.
It's the same end if you don't convert. But you feel better. It's weird to say this, but sometimes I feel way better about fourth and three than I do fourth
that's
and one.
That's what I was just saying.
And so it's just it's all part of what you feel about your own team, too.
Sure.
I know you guys.
Because the analytics don't talk about what team is trying to do this.
Right.
It's
exactly.
A whole,
right.
You're putting everything in together.
Mm-hmm. I know you guys touched on it.
The Chargers are more likely to get it. The Chiefs are more likely to get it. But if you have the Houston Texans, probably not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That going for two to make it nine, from 7 to 9. What was about 8 minutes left in the game, somewhere around there, 8-10?
Yeah, something like
somewhere
that.
Around. That is such a sneaky good go for two movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kicker,
especially when your
kicker's
struggling.
Yeah, especially when your kicker's struggling. But even if it's not, it is such a sneaky chance to kind of put a nail in the in
but it
the
did cup. Open the door for the
it
Raiders
did,
to win the game too, though.
It's especially good one if you have if the opposing coach is maybe an older school coach that you don't think is going to go for two on the back end of it, and so you have a chance to put it away.
But here's the thing about that, and we're going to hear from Andy Reid on going for two. I think I know what he was thinking. That was, listen, I don't feel very good about him making the extra point, because he doinked one off the upright and the other one was very close to hitting the upright, and so I'm not thinking it's a guaranteed one anyway. Anyway, I feel better going for two than thinking he can make the extra point. Yeah. Like, people just automatically say it's a guaranteed point. It's not anymore. It's a 33-yard field goal, in essence. That's what it is. Ain't 19, 20 yards anymore. Here's Andy on going for two.
Well, I thought it was the right thing to do. I would have liked to have completed it, but we didn't get that done. I thought it was important. I mean, points were important, period, but I thought going for two was important, though.
Not really explaining his reasoning too much there, but two is important. Well, it gets you a two-possession lead, but I think it was about lack of faith in the kicker, just like when you went for a fake field goal in Indianapolis. Your kicker had problems. Wright was having problems, and you just feel better about putting it. Once again, why not leave it in Mr. 15's hands? And, yes, he's not going to complete every pass, but I would rather have Mahomes be making a play than relying on a backup kicker.
And also, in this particular game, it kind of, if you do get it up to nine with some short time left, it kind of takes away what the Raiders have been doing best.
Takes away the running game.
Takes away Josh Jacobs, who had been the best part of the Raiders that night. So it really was, I thought, a really smart move to go for two. It didn't work out. Not all of them are going to, but I liked it. I loved it.
I have no problem with what the Raiders did for two, and I have no problem with what the Chiefs did. I like it as well. All right, the Chiefs win. They're now 4-1. They got the Bills coming to town. Short week. Bills look pretty good, but they're banged up in the secondary. Bills got to make the long trip to Kansas City. Bills Chiefs. That should be a heck of a game Sunday afternoon. Pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake. The Raiders now blown a 17-point lead twice already this year.
Yeah.
They're 1-4. They could easily be 4-1. No doubt about it. I'm going to tell you who the next Nebraska Cornhusker head football coach should be. A guy that got fired yesterday. He's better than anybody else out there that's available.
Why am I here today?
What's that? Oh, that's right. Jason wanted the job, my bad. The Carolina Panthers fired Matt Rhule yesterday. And when Frost was fired, we mentioned possibilities of coaches. And, of course, somebody threw out Urban Meyer. You know, that was mentioned nationally. And we went through different ones. Matt Campbell was mentioned, Lance Leipold, Chris Kleiman. And I mentioned Matt Rhule. I said, Matt Rhule is on thin ice in Carolina. If he gets fired, now he's available, and you can speed up the process of getting this thing going.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's a guy you want to wait on that's coaching in college or somewhere else, now Matt Rhule is unemployed. And by the way, Matt Rhule, don't feel bad for the guy. He's going to get paid $834,000 per month for the next 48 months, which is 4 years. And that don't count the money he's going to make when he double dips, goes back to college, and gets paid a lot of money by the Nebraska Cornhuskers. All right? He is unemployed. He was at Baylor and went from 1-11 to 11-3 in 3 seasons. All right? He did a heck of a job there. It didn't go so well in the NFL. Initially, they started okay. He was 11-27 overall. Panthers fired him yesterday. There is no better candidate for the Nebraska Cornhuskers right now that's available. There is no better candidate than Matt Rhule. You cannot. I mean, Lance Leipold would probably be the best. I mean, I hope this don't happen, but I mean, Leipold would be a great, great deal. But Rhule's younger. Now, the only thing is, Leipold goes to Nebraska. That's probably the final stop for Leipold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably about 10 years, and then he might retire. Okay? Whereas Rhule, he might be in Nebraska longer or shorter because he might want another shot at the NFL, or he wants to go to a bigger job than Nebraska. So that would be the catch. But you could argue Matt Campbell could be the same way. That's a name that's been thrown out there. I think the Huskers would be stupid if they haven't already put in a call to Matt Rhule.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't want to put salt in the Kool-Aid of this, but...
But you're going to anyway.
Yeah. Maybe this is just what somebody has to say the day they get fired. But people think that Matt Rhule only has a small list of colleges that he wants to go to right now. Because
he's making
$800,000. It didn't say whether Nebraska was or wasn't on that list. But this person made it sound like it was less likely that this is going to happen. But
what big jobs are available right now? Besides Nebraska,
I don't Arizona, know. If there's any
Arizona,
huge ones.
Arizona State is available. It's
Arizona
not
State,
as big.
Wisconsin,
Wisconsin,
that's, yeah.
And I think Jim Leonard's going to be the guy there.
It
anyway.
Sounds like it, yeah.
So right now, the only big time job available is Nebraska.
Yeah.
It is.
Now there will be some that might pop up when the year's over. And Matt Rhule, if he's smart, he probably will sit out and let it play out, see what's out there, unless he just loves Nebraska right off the bat. But Nebraska, you're making a gigantic mistake if you're sitting there not picking up the phone and
Nebraska
calling Matt Rhule's representation.
Yeah, Nebraska has to.
Yeah, and the thing with Matt Rhule is...
They're smart. They probably already did.
Right.
The success that he's had turning around two very, very bad programs when he took them over in Temple was... Mm-hmm. Nobody talked about Temple football, and he turned them around big time.
Mm-hmm.
And then to come into the situation that he had at Baylor... He's got a track record in college that he doesn't need a bridge job. He doesn't need a stepping stone job to get to somewhere else that he wants to go.
You're right.
So that's, I think, going to be the toughest thing for Nebraska. Is he's not going to sit here and say, oh, Nebraska's the best one open right now.
Yeah, he can wait it out.
So I'm going to take it. No, he's going to wait and see what else happens. You know, somebody, I can't remember who it was, that tweeted out yesterday that said, you know, there might be a team that says, hey, we – we don't absolutely hate our coach, but we also don't love him.
Right.
And we can get Matt Rhule. We're just going to move on from this guy and pay a buyout and get Matt Rhule to come coach us.
Right.
You know, there could be a school that fires a coach because they know Matt Rhule will come to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another thing that you'll kind of start looking at with some of those jobs. And I think Nebraska is foolish if they're not talking to him today.
Sure.
But I think Matt Rhule's foolish if he just says, hey, yeah, I'm going to take the Nebraska job today.
Oh, I'll give you.
Unless they just give him so much money.
Well, I mean, if he gets $9.7 million and gets Nick Saban or Kirby Smart money, then yeah. Go ahead and sign the contract.
Or Jimbo Fisher money.
Yeah.
Well, and that's just it.
And see, Jimbo, could be out,
right.
And then you have an opening at A&M.
Say it goes.
And Matt Rhule was in Baylor, and you're in Texas, so that might be one for Matt Rhule.
Yeah. Let's say that Oklahoma. No.
That's a huge buyout, though. The buyout there is
they're
insane.
They're not paying Jimbo to then pay Matt Rhule after.
I don't think they
would do that. But
there's just always the possibility that maybe Oklahoma doesn't love Venables after next year. Say, they're not going to do anything this year, but say next year goes sideways too. Man, what would stop? There's nothing that's going to stop these places from doing it. You know, buyouts are, you know,
it can be done.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's always a point where Oklahoma State maybe says,
you're not getting
over the top.
Yeah.
So we got to try something else.
Yeah.
So there's three non-zero places, you know, mm-hmm. non-zero chance places. And if you're sitting on $840,000 a month, I'm not in a hurry.
No.
And that's what Dusty's getting.
Yeah,
and so
or you can do what everybody else does, get a TV for a year and wait it out a year and a half.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I love the idea of it. I agree. I would, if it was up to me, he'd be the coach tomorrow. And so
he should be your number one choice right now.
Yeah.
But whether he wants
no
it,
question,
who
yeah.
knows?
Whether, yeah, you're right. Whether
he's
he
accomplished
wants
more
it.
Than Matt Campbell's accomplished.
Yep.
So,
and then, like, even though, you know, no offense to Jayhawk fans, I'm on board with it. But the Leipold thing is to be determined still, too.
Right.
We don't know how big of a turnaround this is going to be yet.
Right.
You might, at the end of the year, going, it's a nice story, but...
Finish 6-6.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. All right, for the third straight week, K-State football player named Big 12 Player of the Week. Safety Josh Hayes named the Defense Player of the Week by the conference on Monday after he helped K-State hold down Iowa State 10-9. He had 11 tackles, including one for loss and a pass breakup. Major League Baseball playoffs division series begin today. If you love baseball, you're going to love today. You got four games, so go ahead and play hooky from work and do whatever you got to do. Work remotely, right? While you're not really working. I'm going to stay home and work remotely. All right there, Jazz. That should be great. Give me what you got done by the end of the day. Haven't heard from Chaz. Wonder what's going on with Chaz.
Just facts a box.
Run right over to Chaz's house. What's Chaz doing? Oh, he's got some Funyuns and a six-pack. And, he seems to be enjoying watching baseball, and there is no laptop anywhere near him.
He just emailed you the box score.
Yeah, right. Whoops. Wrong email. Phillies Braves on Fox at 12:07 today. Best of five. We've all picked the Braves to win, which means the Phillies will pull off the stunner. 2:37 today. The Mariners at the Astros. I went contrarian just to be different. And the Mariners, and they have the Astros, Dusty and Jason, which is probably the smarter pick, no doubt. That's on TBS, but I think there's something unique about these Mariners. Guardians at the Yankees on TBS. We all picked the Yankees. I think everybody in the world is picking the Yankees to win that series. And then the Padres-Dodgers might be the most entertaining of all of them. And there's a lot of hatred there, trust me. Padres-Dodgers on FS1 tonight at 8:37. Your best chance to win a series as an underdog is to do what?
Win game one.
Absolutely.
Steal game one. Then you have home field. And it's the best out of four, and all you got to do is win two out of the next four, knowing that two are at your place. So the best time to get a team when you're an underdog in any sport is right at the beginning of the series. So that's an opportunity for the Phillies, Mariners, Guardians, and Padres, and we're going to find out more about the first time ever that we've had teams have 5 days off between the regular season, the playoffs, the Braves, the Astros, the Yankees, and Dodgers. Will that be helpful for them, and we'll see it pay off big tonight and today, or will we see all four lose and go, wow, that was a bad move and bad thing for these teams getting byes?
Also, for the most part, in theory, the big-time favorites have the big-time ace.
Yeah, they do.
And if you can beat them in a 3-2 game or whatever,
mm-hmm.
then, yeah, you kind of stolen them.
The other reason why you have a better chance to win as an underdog in a best-of-five is obviously a shorter series, but also you don't have to see an ace three times. Mm-hmm. You might get lucky and only see him once, depending on how it's all set up. So that's huge, no doubt, and it'll be a lot of fun. Fox has Phillies Braves at 12:07, FS1 Padres Dodgers 8:37, and then the ALDSs are both on TBS, 2:37 Mariners Astros, 6:37 Guardians at the Yankees. So there you have it. Very eventful Monday Night Football last night. And how about those Chiefs spotting the Raiders' 17-point lead and coming back and winning?
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.